talk about the 12th step, and what we're going to talk about is not just carrying the message. We're going to talk about what it looks like to sponsor people. We're going to talk about what it looks like to actually practice principles in all of your affairs, the very misunderstood and forgotten piece of step 12. So we're going to start it off on chapter 7, working with others, on page 89. I'm going to read a couple things, then we're just going to kind of delve into it. And what you'll notice about this chapter is the wording begins to change from we to you. There's a personal sense of responsibility to carry the message, to sponsor people, to practice principles in your life. Right? We've been kind of doing this as a big group, and granted, we carry the message as a big group, and it's a hoot, but it's your personal responsibility to practice step 12. So it says, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. That's it. It works when other activities fail, because we're going to do that. Sometimes you're going to try to shop. You're going to be trying to have sex. You're going to be trying to get your finances in order to try to get right internally. And what the book is telling me is that that's not going to work, but we're going to try it, and then we're going to figure out that we got to work with others. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. If you're wondering what that message is, it's enclosed in the first 164 pages. Julie doesn't have a message that differs from mine. It's the message. There's only one. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Nobody knows that like the real drunk. Sitting across the table from the other one. Right? We've been misunderstood for a very long time. We've been talked at for a very long time. There's been lots of attempts and lots of failures to get sober. And when something happens, when an alcoholic sits across the table from another alcoholic, a connection is made. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly, all that sickness and all that drama and all those mistakes become a viable resource. And I'm able to pull from that stuff and bring it to light. It says life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, these are your 12-step promises, to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends, this is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. That's an experience of action taken. I remember hearing that in early sobriety, people going, you are the bright spot of my life. I love newcomers. And I thought, y'all are losers. If I'm the bright spot in your life, you're in trouble. You know, I did not understand what it meant to really carry the message and get an effect produced from that. I'm telling you, you will catch a spiritual bump off of carrying the message and sponsoring men and women like you never got in a bottle. Never. Mm-hmm. But until you do that, it sounds real silly. I remember people saying, I love to go to a treatment center on Friday night and carry the message. I thought, God almighty, is that what it's going to be like in sobriety? We're all going to be like the church ladies having picnics and smiling and talking about how much we love each other? Until you know, you don't know. You don't know. It's the absolute coolest thing ever. Life takes on new meaning. You may have had a sense of purpose as a parent or as a coworker or in some other venue in your life, but you want to watch meaning take place? Watch somebody else's life change right before your very eyes. There's nothing like going through the steps yourself. There's nothing like the experience of being changed from the inside out. Help somebody else do it, you'll never be the same.
Yeah.
You'll never be the same. The most baffling thing is when people have the experience of doing that and then they stop doing it. I'm like, that's the good stuff. You don't want to miss that. You don't want to miss that.
Yeah, everybody's always afraid. I mean, some of us come in here and we're always so afraid to sponsor somebody. And we're always so afraid to take that responsibility on. And I understand that, right? But really, who's going to get them sober? God is. It's not your responsibility. Your responsibility is to take them through the steps like you were taught. That's what your sponsor's there too. Your sponsor's there to help you. If you have questions, you call them. No, you don't have all the answers. Right? And so it's not our responsibility to get them sober. It's not our responsibility to take the success of them getting sober or them drinking again. So we have to be real clear on that and say yes. As scared as you are, say yes. Because once you do it, then you, oh my gosh, how cool is that? I was 2 months sober when I first started sponsoring. And I was at a meeting one day and my sponsor comes up to me and he's like, shoves me. And he's like, she needs to do her fifth step. Go. Take her in the back room. I'm like, excuse me? I don't know who you're talking to for one day. No, I didn't. Anyway, so I'm like, okay. I take her. I mean, okay, yes. My sponsor asked me, I say yes. Because I'm indebted to him. Because he's done something for me. He's taken the time and he sat with me and he worked with me. So now I'm indebted to do the same thing. Right? At the bottom of that page, though, I think we tend to want to criticize doctors and ministers and people like that. And I think it's a real shame when we do that. Because the book clearly lays it out in not just one page, but several pages. Always cooperate, never criticize them. Because honestly, that's our lifeline. We can go to hospitals and we can give them our name and number and say, listen, if you have a drunk, because we can be more helpful to them, right, to the alcoholic that comes in the door, if we cooperate with the doctors, if we cooperate with the churches, and then we can give them our names and then they can help us. If we criticize the way they do things, you won't get asked back. You won't be in the doors. And so now you've hurt who? Yourself and the new man that's walking in those doors. Does that make sense? So be careful with that. Go ahead.
Well, that's also another reason to not live in the darkness, but tell your doctors, tell your ministers, tell mm-hmm. professionals that you are in recovery. You will be a viable resource for them. You know, there's ministers that have just labored intensively, long and hard, trying to get us in a position to get sober and not being able to do that. If you can be a resource and a tool, how cool is that? Right? So if we can get in the fellowships, if you choose to go back to church and you want to get in that fellowship, be cooperative. We don't criticize what they're trying to do in the way that they're trying to do it.
How many times have we said, well, where do we find them? I don't have anyone to sponsor. I'm a year sober and nobody's shown up at my group. And every time I hear this a lot, every time someone shows up at my group, everybody attacks them and I don't get to them. Thank God that Bill didn't wait for Bob to show up at a group, and that Ebby didn't wait for Bill to show up at a group, right? Or call him. No, we go out. We go search for the one who is suffering. We're not waiting for them to come to us. You'll read again and again on our first approach, on the second approach. That means we approach them. We don't wait for them. We carry this message. Okay, sorry.
No, you're fine. So on the top of 90, it talks about how we can approach them. It talks about this idea that if he does not or she does not want to stop drinking, don't waste time trying to persuade him. Everybody I know has been guilty of this at one point or another. No, you really want to get sober. You really want to do this. Don't do that. Alcohol, one more time, is the great persuader. I remember trying to chase somebody down at the 24-hour club. I said, I'm going to go get her. She hasn't called me, but I'm going to go find her. Julie said, sit down. Sit down. Don't stalk people. And you can spoil a later opportunity. See, because when you're in active alcoholism, aren't people around you pushing you? Aren't they prodding you? Aren't they urging you? And they're trying to cheer you along. They're trying to force you into recovery. They'll come at you from every angle. We, as members of Alcoholics Anonymous, do not want to do that. We want to lay it open. And if you choose to join us, fantastic. If you don't, we'll still be here when you come back. And that's so okay. So I'm not gonna try to spoil an opportunity trying to persuade you. But there's a couple things I need to know. In the middle of that paragraph, it says, let his friend or family ask if he wants to quit for good and if he go to any extreme to do so. Do you want to quit for good? Are you done? Right? And when they start crawfishing, let them go. Let them go. You'll have problems downstream trying to get them to write inventory, trying to get them to make amends, trying to get them out on the firing line. They won't go. If you're not done, would you do these things?
No,
because it's not the easier, softer way. It's tough stuff getting sober. Mm-hmm. So it talks about not forcing myself upon these people. On 91, at the second paragraph at the bottom, it says, call on him while he's still jittery. He may be more receptive when depressed. When are you more likely to hear some spiritual truth laid before you? Is it when you're 60 days sober and showering and eating and everybody's happy with you? Or is it when you're busted and detoxing? right? Can't quite get it together. And somebody comes to visit you in a facility and says, hey, buddy, if you want a way out, we got one. They start talking about themselves. See, if you've been talked at for a long time, you understand that you've got to change that approach. I don't go to treatment centers and try to talk at the patients. You guys better do this, and you guys are alcoholics, and you guys don't do that. Right? If we're armed with the facts about ourselves, I can begin to speak about me, my alcoholism, my symptoms, and you can begin to identify. And it's a very different, I'm more likely to approach you. We're like startled deer. You know, we don't one tap too hard and we'll be out the door sprinting. If you will talk about yourself, the facts from the textbook, lay it out, they will begin to approach you. The ones that want it will. And the ones that don't and think they got a better way, you won't have to get in the mix with that. Does that make sense? It's a different way to look at it. And this is when the war stories become very appropriate. When I'm visiting you and you're coming off of a run and you're trying to regain your composure and I'm saying, hey, buddy, I've been there too. You know, my last run looked like, you know, blah, 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 blah. We start sharing some stories and you start identifying and start getting comfortable. Because we are not comfortable talking about that stuff, at least not initially, with people that don't understand. We're more likely to be dishonest. Mm-hmm. And the book goes on to talk about that. You know, we can't be approached by people sometimes in other professions, by family members, by well-meaning people who want to love us, but there's a barrier. If you don't know what it's like to wake up in the morning, not want to drink, but know without a doubt you're going to anyway, don't talk to me about it. Right. That's kind of how it works.
You know, on 92 it says, if he is alcoholic, he will understand you at once. Right? So here's the identification process. I'm sitting down with this new man, new woman, and I'm sitting here and we're matching stories and we're matching the mental twist and I'm going, oh my God, every day I woke up and I resigned to the fact that I wasn't going to pick up a drink and I did it anyway and then I'm drunk, right? And so we're sitting here matching our stories. Now, if he's an alcoholic, he's going to go, yep, that's me. You got it, right? If there are deers in a headlight, you might want to say, might have to come back. Call me later. Right? They're not. If he's an alcoholic, he's going to understand at once. He's going to match that mental inconsistency with some of his own. It didn't say we're identifying with losing our jobs, does it? It doesn't say we're identifying with losing this or losing that and all the unmanageability. Right? Unmanageability is the no. The unmanageability is that I can't manage that decision to stay stopped, right? So it's not about all the injuries. Because look, I love how the doctor's opinion says our life becomes the only normal one. And it's absolutely normal for a doctor to go into surgery with a little nippy poo, just like it is normal for the housewife to need to go to the grocery store with a little nippy poo behind her. Just like it's absolutely normal for the high school student to go into the classroom with a little nippy poo behind him. It's absolutely normal for the guy pushing his cart down the street to have the little nippy poo behind him. So here, what do we all have in common? The nippy poo. We have to have it. Right? And so that's what we're trying to match here. We're not trying to match our external stuff. We're trying to match and identify with each other the mental component and the physical component. Right? And so we're getting real clear on this. And if we're not clear on this, it goes on to say, if you are satisfied that he is a real alcoholic, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Then we can dwell on that. From what? From my own experience of the queer mental twist surrounding that first drink. Yeah, but something okay. Add to that.
No, are you? You keep going.
It just goes on to say, continue to speak of this. Like, we're just giving him a good old case of alcoholism. We just want to reel him in with that. Because if he doesn't understand the problem, he's not going to surrender to the solution. We're not trying to say, oh my God, I got spiritual. Right? We don't start with that. We start with the problem. What's the problem? Oh my gosh, I can't quit drinking. Oh my gosh, why? Right? And then we wait. We sit back and we wait. We wait for them to ask, hey, what'd you do? Right? I hear you. I hear what you're saying. I'm identifying. I got it. I understand that. That's me. What did you do? And then we go, reel them in. Hook, line, and sinker.
Right, but what we're doing is we've been taught proficiently by Cliff not to put the cart before the horse. And Bill did that initially. He went out and told everybody about his white lightning experience, and the drunks didn't care. They didn't. And it wasn't until he got with Silkworth who said, "Buddy, you're flip-flopping it. Talk about the problem. Let him identify first, and then hit him with the solution." I mean, haven't you tried to be saved before? Haven't you tried? You ever had that experience? Identify with them first, and then you can kind of hit them sideways. You got to work with a drunk. And it's important. It says, let him ask you that question if he will. If they're not interested, leave them alone. Mm-hmm. Do the kind thing. If they think they can handle it on their own, what do they do with Fred and Fred's story? Mm-hmm. He said, "I got it." And they said, "Deuces. Here's my number. Call me when you're ready." Mm-hmm. They heard no more of Fred for a while. And that was the experiment that he needed to have. And we don't stand in the way of them do that. So let them ask you the question if he will. Then I can stress it freely. And I'm also real clear that you can choose whatever conception you'd like. Just because so-and-so's a Christian, just because so-and-so's a Buddhist, just because so-and-so believes in spirit of the nature of the universe or the whatever, doesn't matter. Can you get with there's something bigger out there that wants to get you sober? If you can, cool, let's move on. Mm-hmm. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. I mean, we've seen it over and over and over. And then you've got somebody on the flip side that's uber religious, who knows it all. What do you do with that? Well, it's going to tell you at the bottom of 93, if they know all this and they've got convictions and they've got training, they've got knowledge surrounding this, he may be an example of the truth that faith alone is insufficient. Right? To be vital, faith must be accompanied by self-sacrifice and unselfish constructive action. Right? I know you love God. I know you do. But what does your behavior show? What does your action show? You can quote this, but what are you doing with it? You guys know what I mean by that? I'm a woman that can sit in church, quote the scripture, look in awe at the beautiful, majestic paintings of my Creator, and know I'm going to the liquor store tonight. Without a doubt. Right? That's not about a relationship. That's about a longing for, a desire for. But it didn't get me sober. It was insufficient. So I've got to have some action behind it. And it says real clear, we don't represent any faith or denomination. You're free to believe whatever you want to believe. But you've got to find him now. Him, her, it, whatever. Whatever your prejudices are, can we set it aside for now until you can get with something different?
Mm-hmm. And so let's say we hook him, and let's say he's like, "Yes, yes, I'm on board. That's me." Right? Go to the bottom of 94. It says, your candidate may give reasons why he not follow all of the program. How many times have we heard, "Well, I don't need that. That's so good for you. I got this, I sponsored this one girl, and I was like, okay, baby, this, after we went worked through the steps, I'm like, all right, we're going to do this Thursday meeting, and we do it. We carry the message here." And she's like, "Oh, I have group therapy at that time." I'm like, right on. Right on. If that helps you, cool. Go. Right? Because, look, it says, he may have good reasons why he not follow all of the program. He may rebel at the thought of drastic house cleaning, which requires discussion with other people. Don't contradict it. Don't tell them they're wrong. Let them have their way. If they don't understand that you've got to be able to exhaust all measures before mm-hmm. you apply this whole program. See, we don't want you coming in and taking part of the program and not all of the program, because that's not going to keep you sober for good and all. We want you to come in and be convinced that you need all of it, because that's what's going to keep you willing to stay in the trenches all the time for the lifetime, right? Yeah. So we're not going to contradict them. We're going to let them go. I see it all the time. People trying to talk people out of leaving. Please sit. Stay. No. Go. If you have a better plan, go. The book on the next page says, we don't have a monopoly on God. My God, I've seen people go to church and get sober and be happy. Mm-hmm. That can happen. Who am I to know what they need in their life? That is me playing God. Who am I? And I sit there and I hear people badmouth people that leave and do other things. How dare you? Who are you to tell people that you know better than God what they need in their life? They might be successful at doing mission work or doing whatever. They may stay sober and be happy. That doesn't mean that they're not a real alcoholic or whatever. God may just have a different plan for them. know his plan for me, and it's here. That's all I need to know. Nobody else is any of my business. Sorry. Never talk down to an alcoholic. Or get on a spiritual hilltop. I'm sorry if I do. I can't help it. Simply lay out the kit of spiritual tools. For instance, I always tell, you know what, when I'm working with girls today, I always try to impress on them. I am not above you, and I am not below you, baby. I'm going to walk shoulder to shoulder with you. And that is my goal, to walk shoulder to shoulder with you. Please don't ever think you can't share anything with you, me. Please know that I am here for you. Your sobriety is the only thing I care about. We're in this together. And come on, let's get real. Us women can be pretty darn catty, can't we?
Mm-hmm.
Why? Why do we do that here? Why do we?
It's like crabs in a bucket.
What's the number one offender? Why do we try to cause it in this program? Mm-hmm. What can run women out of this room more than anything? You think the man getting in her pants is running her out? No. It's the women that are talking about her behind her back. Because they don't think she should be doing that. Or they don't think she should be doing that. Or they don't think she should be wearing that. None of our business. When a woman walks through that door, what does she walk through that door for? To get sober. I have seen women pick up a chip, a birthday chip, and I have seen other women roll their eyes. Mm-hmm. Shame on them. Shame on them. You don't have a right to judge anybody in this room. I guarantee you, I don't have a right to judge anybody in this room. Because what is a sponsor? What does a sponsor not do? If he's not interested in your solution, if he expects you to act only as a banker for his financial difficulties or a nurse for his sprees, you may have to drop him until he changes his mind. That's why you drop him. You don't drop him because he's not wearing the right clothes, or he didn't get the job that you told him to get, or he didn't do this, or he didn't do that. If he's expecting you to be God in his life, you can drop him. Other than that, you work with him. People try to play God in this room way too much. I see it all the time, and I'm really tired of it. I'm really sick of it. Because what happens is those women and those men leave, and they think AA sucks. AA doesn't work, and those people are crazy, and I'm one of them. And thank God I came back. Thank God I came back. So let's get this clear of what a sponsor is and what a sponsor isn't. A sponsor isn't God. My God, weren't you tired? If you're getting tired with your protege, you're playing God. We're all guilty of it. I'm guilty. I have been at the point where I'm arguing with the girl. I'm like, wait a minute. I'm debating what I'm saying to you. Stop. You follow the suggestions or you don't, right? I've got these suggestions, the 12 steps, the 12 traditions, the concepts, right? Go work with another. God will solve your problem. I know that. If you're not willing to do that, I don't have anything else for you. Now, I have life experiences. I have 4 children. I have a husband. I have some life experiences. I can share that with you. Some of it might benefit you, but I can't expect you to follow those suggestions. The only thing I can do is expect you to follow the 12 steps and the 12 traditions in this room and out there. Does that make sense?
A little circle snap. Love it. Love it. Well, So we're talking about what a sponsor's not. Let's get clear about what a sponsor is. So back on back on 18, in the italicized portion of the text, it says, but the ex-problem drinker who has found this solution, specific solution, who is properly armed with the facts about himself, can generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. Until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing can be accomplished. So then they're talking about the identification piece. Now they're looking at this. The man who's making the approach, like Julie talked about, has had the same difficulty. Can't put the bottle down no matter what. That he obviously knows what he's talking about. That his whole deportment shouts at the prospect he's a man with a real answer. Right? If you have an answer, you don't have to convince people you have an answer. Your whole deportment oozes that you have something going on. That I have no attitude of holier than thou, nothing whatever except the sincere desire to be helpful. Guys, these people you sponsor are not your lackeys. They're not your roadies. They're not. I can't tell you how many times Julie and I have sat in meetings and heard people say, "Well, I get my guys to come over and take down my Christmas lights, and I get my guys to come over and do." And I'm like, really?
Sign me up for that one.
They're dying of alcoholism. And you're treating them like they're your helpers.
Mm-hmm.
It's not okay. That's about your alcoholic ego in the sickest proportion, the absolute sickest proportion. That there are no fees to pay, no axes to grind, no people to please, no lectures to be endured. Except for that one.
I lecture.
These are the conditions we found most effective. After such an approach, many take up their beds and walk again. Here's what you got to understand about sponsorship. We have a friend in Dallas, Michael, that used to say this, and I used to think, God, you're so dramatic. But he said, you know, the big book was written in blood. Right? It came out of the successes, but more often than not, it came out of the failures. This is why we know so much today about sponsorship based on this text, because they messed it up real bad and recorded it over and over and over so we can learn what to do and what not to do. Right? Because we're not perfect. We don't walk on water. Julie said it. There's times that we mess up. Sure. But we got to have a guiding path. You are not the puppet master. Julie and I seem like we get on a roll about this. There's a reason for it. There's a reason for it, especially with women. If you've ever had a sponsor control you, you'll get real passionate about it, what it looks like to have a reliance upon God rather than a reliance upon a sponsor calling the shots. It's not okay. I've had it happen to me for a long time. It's not okay. Find somebody that understands this text that doesn't want to do your job. I remember calling Julia a couple years ago and trying to make her make a decision for me. That is so frustrating because she won't do it. Mm-hmm. She was like, I don't know what you don't hear me say about go to God. And I'm like, just tell me what you think then. You know, I'm trying to come at her sideways. Just, what's your opinion? I'm just curious. You know, and she's like, I got to go. Get off the phone. Hey. Get somebody that understands that will drive you back into the book and drive you back into working with others and what the real solution is. Because otherwise, you're so screwed. Because what happens when your sponsor doesn't answer the phone and give you the immediate answer? What might you have to do?
Oh, shit.
We're in trouble now. Because they're not available to you 24/7. My people know, I will shut my phone off.
Yeah.
Don't call me after. I got stuff to do. Love you, but let's look at what we're really supposed to be doing. So it says, if he's sincerely interested and wants to see you again, ask him to read this book in the interval. I'm going to show you what any links looks like. If I'm going to ask you to do this, we're going to read what it looks like. After doing that, you have to decide for you if you want to go on. You shouldn't be pushed or prodded by your spouse, your friends, the AA community, a sponsor who doesn't have anything better to do and no other protege, so they're going, by God, you're going to get sober. No. If you're to find God, the desire must come from within. I will never be able to scare you into sobriety. I'll never be able to stand on the sidelines and cheer you in. It won't work. Temporarily it could, but frothy emotional appeal just doesn't suffice, does it? Anybody in here have kids? You ever seen your kid look at you with that scared look on their eyes? If that didn't get you sober, why the hell would I? Right? Don't do that. When you're out carrying the message, show them the facts. Don't threaten them. Scare them into trying to get sober. You will never be successful in that manner. And these guys understood that. It says if they think they can do a job in another way, and Julie's already covered this, encourage them to follow your conscience. Hey, if you want to leave and go to Celebrate Recovery, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in contact with me. Let me know how that's going. I'm going to encourage you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm outie, 5,000. I'm going to church. I'm done with this. Cool. Let me know what service you're going to. Maybe I'll pop in sometime and we can have lunch. Stop cutting people off. Right? And we've all done it. Let me know how that works for you.
Yeah.
Wow. How hurtful. How hurtful. We don't have to do it that way. We just don't.
Well, and on top of that, because the book talks about us finding a friend. And I know a lot of people say, I'm your sponsor, I'm not your friend. And I get that. I understand that. But on, I mean, it talks about over and over. Well, it says it somewhere else too. But on 95, where do you...
Offer him.
Yeah, offer him friendship and fellowship. What part of that did they not read? Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't done this yet. I need to look up the word friend in the dictionary and see what friend is. It doesn't mean I have to be your buddy. It doesn't mean like I love hanging out with you all the time and we're going to go shopping and we're going to go to the movies, right? But I can offer you some friendship, right? Mm-hmm. It also, I mean, it says it. Oh, where was it? I just circled it. I was going through and trying to find, okay, where is it all the places that friend is? Because it's all over, right? You made a good friend. If he doesn't want to see you again, at least he knows you, right? All over. Guys, this isn't about me placing myself above you. Seriously, let's get over it. We're a bunch of drunks in a room. Who is above one another, right? Aren't we all the same? We're all the same, shoulder to shoulder.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I see what you're talking about. Over on 94, it says, if your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you've perhaps made a friend. That's what she's referring to. It gets real dangerous when we start putting each other on pedestals, or we start shoving people way down here and not circulating shoulder to shoulder like we're talking about. I can guarantee you this. I don't care if you know, I have this many years, Julie has that many years, Angie does, and you've got 3 months. Every one of us woke up on the same playing field this morning. You either chose to utilize the tools and get on a spiritual path with me, or you didn't. Right? We're all on the same playing field, but when we start differentiating, it gets real, real, real dangerous. Just to make that point one more time. But it also talks about this idea that... I'm going to let it go with that. We're going to be friendly and we're going to let it go with that. I'm not going to deprive you of an avenue, and I'm not going to deprive you of a last drink if you need to take one. So, okay, go have the experience you need to have. It says on 96, it talks about not being discouraged if they don't respond at once. I'm going to search out another drunk and try again. Bill did that, right? Over and over and over, continuing to search them out. And if he'd gotten disheartened with the first half a dozen that didn't get sober, didn't really want this program, he'd quit. Can't afford to get that. I remember being 6 months, 9 months sober and telling Julie, nobody wants this. Nobody wants you. You know? She said, wait on the one. You wait on the one, and that one was Angie. Thank God I waited on her. Right? And she had the same, Audrey, nobody wants this. Angie, you wait on the one.
Mm-hmm.
Over and over and so on and so forth, right? I can't be discouraged because who's staying sober doing it? Right? Bill had that. Man, nobody wants this. And Lois said, I don't care. You're going to keep doing it. I don't care who wants it. You're staying sober and you've never been sober in your whole life. Go get them.
Yeah.
Go get them.
And I mean, so we get that one, right? We get the one that wants to start on the path of recovery and they're on their way and then all is good. And then the next thing you know, what do we start hearing? Their problems. We always get the phone call. Oh, but you don't understand. I can't make that commitment because this. You know, we say, go carry the message. And they're, well, you don't understand. I can't stay with... And so I love how on page 90 it says, burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trusts God and clean house. I mean, the coolest thing is that... we can get sober regardless of the circumstances, right? Home or no home, wife or no, well, the book says husband, wife, no husband, wife. And so the cool, and the thing is as the sponsor, it's not our responsibility to handle their affairs. Whose responsibility is it? Because if we shoulder their burdens, we will get tired. It's burn the consciousness that God will. God will. And so we just constantly take them back to God. I can't express that enough. You know, I mean, if I'm sitting there and I'm taking on their burdens and trying to solve all their problems, then I'm playing God once again. And so we go on and we get to... we get to go out and carry this message, and we always wonder, what message are we carrying, right? The message is we've had a spiritual experience. Mm-hmm. And the thing is if I ask you if you've had a spiritual experience and you can't say yes immediately, you might want to look at what you're doing. You might want to rethink. Like, have you had a spiritual experience as the result of the steps? Yeah. Yes, I have. I know I have. If you have to think about it, if you have to stop and look at me like deer in headlights, yeah, I'm going to think not, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like sex. You know if you've had sex, right? It's pretty spiritual to some. Okay, so you know if you've had it. It's no secret. It's kind of like that. The spiritual experience, you know. You know. There's no not knowing. And then you know you got it, and then I'm telling you, you want to give it away. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like when Bill was sitting in that bar, because see, life is going to hit. Life is going to come and life is going to hit. And it doesn't mean that life is going to hit and it's going to be bad. Life can hit with a very sunny day. Mm-hmm. Not a cloud on the horizon. End of a perfect day. Right? My thought is, see, those are the days that I think about a drink. It's like, oh my gosh, sunshine, pool, right? Bikini. I look hot. Not really. Delusional. If I had a drink, I might. Clothes are coming off. Oh, put them back on, they say. Not cute. But Bill was there. He was stuck in that spot, and he's like, oh my gosh. I've got the gay chatter of in the bar, and the romancing of that drink comes back. And what does he do? What's his next thought? Oh my gosh. But what about those alcoholics? And what about the families of those alcoholics? Who can I help? I've had that same thought come to me before. Right? And so that's the cool thing. That's why we encourage you to work the steps rapidly, to start sponsoring quickly. Because if you don't, then you're missing what's good about the program. You're missing the whole factor of the program. Because it's kind of like, I can have a spiritual experience by working the steps and then sit at home. How selfish is that? How selfish would it be for me to sit at home and not give back what I've been freely given? See, I didn't do anything but work some steps to get connected to this power and wake up and not want to drink. If I don't give that back, then I will lose it, for sure. I will. I know that, because I've tried everything else. So what we do is we teach them to go out and carry the message and start working with others, so that comes
full circle.
Full circle. Thank you.
So I just want to say real quickly, I know we're running out of time and we've got some questions to answer. Is this idea of practice and principles, is this is something that we don't really talk about a lot? We've talked about carrying the message and going out to carry the message. We talked about sponsoring. I want to talk to you a minute about principles. Because here's the thing. I hear a lot of times people say, well, if you sponsor people, you'll never get loaded again. You could never relapse. And the book clearly tells me I've got some immunity. But let me promise you this. I've seen people lead a double life in recovery, get real sick behind it, and there may be extended periods of time where they don't drink, but do you want to live like that? And eventually you will pick up a drink. I'm here to tell you. I've watched more people do that around, won't tell you who they really are, won't tell you what's really going on. Don't expect to continue to run over the people in your life, not practicing principles, but slide into AA and be spiritual for an hour and sponsor a bunch of people because it makes you feel good about you and be okay. It won't. You can't not cheat on your taxes, and you can't do that anymore. You can't continue to sleep around on your spouse anymore. You can't continue to be dishonest with your boss anymore. Now, are you going to fall short? Absolutely. I'm not saying you're here to walk on water. God, please don't misunderstand me. That's why we have a tenth step. When I mess up, I clean it up. I'm talking about people that aren't willing to clean it up. I'm talking about people that feel justified in whatever they feel justified in. Because why? They're on the firing line. right? You guys see that? It's real easy to hide out in 12-step work because you're not willing to face the principles that you need to be practicing. And what are the principles? That's a great question. People say, what are the spiritual principles? I remember asking Julie that one time. I was like, hey, what are the principles of the program? Like, real, I'm embarrassed. I don't know this. Tell me. You know, and we're flipping through the book and we're pulling them out. Honesty. Where are you with some honesty and integrity in your life today? Right? When you, I love that Chris always says that when he goes to get a paper, if he accidentally grabs two, he'll circle the parking lot back, park his truck, go out and put that one back. Now, would it really matter? No. Does it matter to him? Yeah. Wonder why. That's about a pathway to your Creator. What are you allowing to block it? Right? I don't want to get on a huge rant with it, but it's worth making a point about. It's really worth making a point about, where are you with the spiritual principles? If you don't know what they are, let's talk. Let's go find them. Let's look at this kind of stuff, because you can't afford not to practice them. We've stepped over too many people that thought that they could do what they wanted to and just carry the message and they'd be okay, and you can't. You just can't. So it's worth making a point about. You got anything else?
Okay. I'm going to read this and then we'll get on to the question. It says, you know, because we come in here and we think, oh my gosh, am I doomed to this, to a life of boredom? If you're bored in AA, you're not sponsoring. You're not carrying the message. Because I guarantee you the book even talks about how there's going to be broken pianos and there's going to be this and there's going to be that. Ask my husband. It was never boring around our household. Ask my daughter. She remembers it better. But it says, is there a substitute? Yes, there is a substitute, and it's vastly more than that. It is a fellowship in Alcoholics Anonymous, and there you will find release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired, and life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence lies ahead. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you. How's this going to come about? You're going to meet these friends in your own community near you. Alcoholics are dying helplessly like people in a sinking ship, and that is so true still today. Right? That is true today. If you live in a large place, there are hundreds, high and low, rich and poor. Oh, I'm sorry, 152. These are future fellows of Alcoholics Anonymous. Among them, you will make lifelong friends. Lifelong friends. I don't know, how long did y'all keep friends?
I traded.
I was like, they quit calling me for some reason. I never knew why. Must have been that blackout I didn't know I had. You will be bound to them with new and wonderful ties. You will escape disaster together, and you will commence shoulder to shoulder your common journey. Then you will know what it means to give of yourself that others may survive and rediscover life. You will learn the full meaning of love thy neighbor as thyself. How cool is that? Do you know how long I looked for this in my church? Do you know how long I looked for this in my home? In my this and my that? In the self-help books? And I come to AA and I work some steps and I get connected to this power and I find it. And I find it in here. Because you know what? For the first time, I found my purpose. I used to sit in my backyard with a bottle every night, crying out to God, God, what's my purpose? I know I have one. And He has told me today, your purpose is to be an Alcoholics Anonymous. Because you are an alcoholic. And your purpose is to pull that woman with a vision of hope. You go into any meeting you want to with a big book. You go into any meeting you want to with a big book. You can take any topic that anybody throws out. You can open your big book and you can come at it with a big book. You can pull anybody with a vision with a big book. This isn't rocket science. But we've got to start pulling people with the vision of hope and not doom and gloom. We've got to start pulling people with the vision and to know that they can recover from this. No, they're not cured, but they can recover and they can live free and happy. We're not always happy. I don't always wake up and I go, oh my God, I'm so happy today. I'm going to go skippy hula. There are days when I'm not so happy, but I guarantee you I'm free every day. Every day. Every other day I woke up and I said, please not today. I can't drink today. And today I don't even wake up and think of that. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous can provide, besides some lifelong friends. Come and join us. We got some questions.
We're going to wrap it up. We're going to talk.
Keep it on. I can do with it. Go, because I'm going to pull this up on my...
She's bossy. I don't know if y'all noticed that. Okay, so here's a question. What if you 10-stepped about someone with a few people, and it was kind of gossipy? I like that word, gossipy.
Kinda. I like
kinda gossipy. Yeah. That's awesome.
It's not a gossip. There's some dishonesty.
Is that harming that person? And if so, is an amends owed? Right? So those are the kind
good
of situations
question.
That I get myself into. when I want to, yeah, when I am searching for an answer, but more or less I'm searching to gossip is kind of what that's about. See, if I've got a problem with Julie, I'm not going to pull six or seven of you and tell you about it under the vice of I'm trying to 10 step. I'm not trying to knock who wrote this question because I get it. I understand that. Go to your sponsor. Go to your sponsor. Go to your sponsor. Right?
We're all so guilty of
it. Oh, my God. I'll hold court under that. I'm just really looking for the right thing to do. Really, I'm trying to badmouth Julie.
Well, isn't any time we're badmouthing anybody and any time we're trying, isn't it all about pride and we're trying to look better? Isn't that what that's about? So my suggestion is get on your hands and knees and do a 6 and 7 on it. Ask God to remove it because it's true selfishness and it's arrogance of you trying to be right. Quit it. It's wrong. I'm guilty. I'm not going to say I'm not.
Sure.
I've done it. There are people that I don't like, and I made sure that everybody knew how wrong they were. And I was absolutely wrong. And I try my best today not to do that. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And when you catch yourself doing that, go make amends with the people you gossiped with.
Yeah.
For sure.
For sure, do that. Don't go tell the person that you gossiped about. Don't do that. Mm-hmm. Unless you continue it... Then you might have to get humiliated. No, I'm kidding.
We'll edit that section.
I had to do it. That's why I said.
Yeah.
That's what helped
but typically,
me quit.
Typically, that's not what we do. If you gossip about me,
I don't
want
to
come
know.
Tell me.
I don't want to know. No, I don't want to know that you gossiped about me.
No, go make it right.
I prefer to like you.
Go make it right with the people you were speaking with. Right, that's what you can do. I've absolutely done that. You got one?
Well, it says in is this out something is anonymous.
If, it is.
If it's anonymous, why do you use your last names? I'm gonna read this thing from Dr. Bob's on Tradition 11. This is a great question. A great question. It says, we need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. So let's remember what Tradition 11 says, okay? At press, radio, and film. Dr. Bob, co-founder of AA, commented on Tradition 11 as follows. Since our tradition on anonymity designates the exact level where the line should be held, it must be obvious to everyone who can read and understand the English language that to maintain anonymity at any other level is definitely a violation of this tradition. The AA who hides his identities from his fellows in AA by using only a given name violates the tradition just as much as the AA who permits his name to appear in the press in connection with matters pertaining to AA. The former is maintaining his anonymity above the level of press, radio, and films, whereas the tradition states that we should maintain our anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And it's kind of like if I just say, hey, I'm Julie, I'm an alcoholic, and I leave, how is anybody ever going to look in a phone book and find Julie Alcoholic? Right? That's why I introduce myself as Julie Harvey Alcoholic. The reason I have busted a few of my friends' anonymity is because I've had their permission. Mm-hmm. Normally, I would not bust your anonymity, but there's a few of my friends that I'm allowed to. And have their permission.
Absolutely. If you have made an amends to someone you ran into, do you owe an amends for making that amends out of selfishness? I stepped in some shit, let me clean it up. Right?
It happens. It happens. What I mean when I tell you to make an appointment is initially start contacting people. When you get your 9-step amends list, get on the phone, get on the email, get on the something, start contacting people. Don't lay your list aside and go, I run into most of these people on a monthly or yearly basis, so I'll just, you know, when I bump into them, I'll do the amends. That's what I'm talking about. Now, if there's somebody, I don't know where you are, and I bump into you in another state, I'm going to grab you. Because I don't know when I could get that opportunity again. So no, you don't owe amends for doing it out of selfishness, but don't purposefully happenstance upon people. That's what I mean by that. Does that kind of make it a little bit clear? Or did I muddy it up a little
bit? No, you did. Yeah, she was kind of worried about that. All right. How do I get a sponsor who really knows the book? Are they carrying one? Is it highlighted? Well, not everybody has to highlight their book. If you don't know anybody in your group, please grab my card and I will find out who's in your area because I do have some contacts. Mm-hmm. So anybody's welcome to grab my card anyway. You're more than welcome to call me and discuss the big book anytime with me because that is my favorite thing. Mm-hmm.
And you can add, there's a couple little questions that are dead giveaways, and one of them is, you want to ask a sponsor some questions, you don't want to just go, well, you look nice, I'll do you. No, have you had a spiritual experience as a direct result of working these steps? Anybody that has is like, grab your smokes, let's go outside, I got lots to share. People that don't, they'll get real weird with you. They'll start crawfishing, and they're like, well, I go to a lot of meetings, and I've been sober for 3 years, and that's pretty good. You know, they'll get weird. They won't know the answer. That's a real easy one to kind of gauge it by. But, you know, Julie and I are more than happy to try to connect you. Our Julie's sponsor knows everybody since the beginning of time, I think, in lots of areas, and we can try to kind of connect some dots for you if we can help you. We'd love to.
Y'all have any other questions?
Where do we get your card? I noticed that you're making a CD of us. You haven't yet, and apropos of the anonymity thing. I know that AA as a whole is considering the internet as a new form of the media for, where we protect our anonymity. Mm-hmm. So would I assume then that the tape of this would not be on the internet?
No, it is. But it's xaspeakers.com and things like that. So you can download this tapes on that.
But even on the website, it'll say, you know, Julie H., Audrey C.,
right.
On some of those websites. We do get that about the print in the internet. Yeah, sure. But it slides through the cracks sometimes. And I'm telling you what, I'm a busted drunk, and I'm real unconcerned with people knowing it. That's, you know, Audrey Chapman, busted drunk. You know, don't care. You can bust my anonymity all day long.
Yeah.
All day long.
When will we receive that in the mail or CD?
Angie.
Yeah, I have to ask Angie that.
We don't know that stuff.
I don't know
stuff.
Any of that.
Anybody else?
1 week. I have a question. You keep saying protege. I know it's in the book somewhere.
It
where is.
Where
is it?
It's all over the book. There's protege, prospect, all kinds of stuff.
And working with others.
Mm-hmm.
On page 92, very bottom. There's one.
There's a couple different places it shows up. Anybody else?
Thank you so much, guys, for having us. It has been an absolute pleasure. An honor.
We love every bit of it.